Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
How you feeling, Raider Nation? It's a Wednesday, hump day, baby. Are you ready? Are you ready for Monday? Yes, it's right around the corner. Monday Night Football, the Raiders host the New Orleans Saints. I bring in my co-host, Q Myers. Q, man, I am pumped up today.
Are you?
What'd you do?
You had a couple extra Jen's Ultimate Protein Bars?
I did. Well, I went back to my banana this week, or I should say
okay,
today.
There you go.
Today.
Your go-to.
I took your advice. I took a box of my Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bars, and I hid them from the kids, like you said.
That's what you should do.
And my wife said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Q told me to hide these."
Right.
And she's like, "What else are you hiding?" And I'm just kidding. No, but we're back here, Silver and Black today, powered by Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys. Call them anytime, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what is right. We're back to talk about Raider football. And Q, I don't know if you saw the big announcement today, but we got to talk about this right at the top of the show. Of course, the Raiders had so many things planned for this first game in Las Vegas, the first regular season NFL game to ever be played in the city, ever to be played in their new palatial home of Allegiant Stadium. But no, COVID stopped that. But there are the Raiders have come up with something really cool. You ready for this?
Yes, sir.
The band, The Killers. The Killers are from Las Vegas. They're a local band. Okay, they went on to worldwide success. Huge, huge, massive, massive success. The Killers are going to be playing at halftime on top of a roof at Caesar's Palace.
Nice.
So if you hadn't heard that yet, it's going to be pretty cool. They're going to be broadcasting it clearly on ESPN on the TV, so you'll be able to see it. But a big deal, the Killers, local favorites, of course, worldwide recording artists. They've sold umpteen million albums and downloads, you name it. Those guys are big here in Las Vegas and big around the world. And the Raiders, look, even when they can't have fans there, they go out of their way to make sure that they do something special, because this game is such a big deal. And Q, I'm going to argue this, because there's been a lot of incredible things that have happened in the city of Las Vegas. We have very important milestones. We've had amazing boxing matches here, okay? We've had all sorts of sporting events and those types of things. But I'm going to go on record as saying this is, to me, this is the biggest night, okay, in Las Vegas history, period.
Wow.
Yes, because it is the NFL. It is an official NFL market. We're going to be on national TV. It just is a big, big moment for the city, and I think it's going to be spectacular. Now, the one thing I'll say is I keep seeing a lot of Raider fans. They're saying they're coming here, right? And I know that a lot of them are, and you can go to some sports books. Of course, it's social distanced at the sports books, too. You have to keep space. But I'm just cautioning people, because I want a big party here, okay? We've all been cooped up, Q, right? We all want to get together and watch football.
Right.
But I see a lot of folks coming out. Just be careful, because there's going to be a lot of disappointment, I think, just because there's a lot of places still closed. But I know Raider Nation will find each other. Just remember, 50 people is the limit. So if you get here, I don't want you to get arrested. So come down, have fun, go by the stadium. The Raider Image Store inside the stadium, which is an amazing facility in itself, opened up today to the public, Q.
So is it, I mean, you obviously access it from outside the stadium, so you don't technically go into the stadium, right?
That is correct.
Okay. But let me ask you this.
Yes.
Last week, I saw people before the first game, which obviously was on the road, I saw them out at Allegiant Stadium in the parking lot. It almost looked like they were tailgating there.
Yes.
Is that still going to be okay, or is that a no-go?
That's a no-go. So
okay.
The organization, actually Allegiant Stadium, I shouldn't say the organization, oh, that's part of the Raiders, but Allegiant Stadium put out a notice earlier in the week saying, don't come tailgate. You can't congregate around the stadium. By the way, because it's a game day, And the players will be there, and all staff that are running the game, and including media. It's going to be like a game day. So there'll be security everywhere. You're not going to be able to park where you're not supposed to park. So although people are going to want to come to the stadium, they're not going to get very close because of that stuff. But when the game's not going on, yeah, you can walk up, you can see bricks, you can do all that kind of stuff. And now the store's open, and we're going to talk to later in the show, Q, Mick Akers, our friend from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He's covered the stadium construction and everything for all this time. And he's going to come on and talk to us. He was at the opening of the store, so he'll give us some more of those details on when you can access it, how you can access it, and all that, because they have some gear in there, man, I have never seen anywhere else. So clearly they're debuting some things at the stadium store that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty cool pictures, some things that I'll probably never be able to put into my collection, but some really cool stuff that they had in the shop. So it's just getting closer and closer, and a lot of fans are going to get excited. Of course, they're going to go there and check it out. I will think that after the game on Monday, I think there'll be a lot of people maybe on the sidewalks, possibly, you know, hoping to wave at some of the players as they drive out of the stadium, maybe, possibly.
I've seen some great Raider fan groups and stuff on Twitter saying that they're going to go watch the buses and all that stuff. I'm just telling you guys, I would love nothing more than to see that. I'm sure the players would too. I just don't know how close you're going to get. We'll try to get some info. I'm going to try to update everybody tomorrow. I'm going to send a note over to the folks of the Raiders and ask them, just so I can give you guys all the latest information. So if you're coming to Las Vegas, that's fine. We want you here. We need tourists. But at the same time, I don't want you to be disappointed. So I'm going to get all the information I can, and we'll update you here on Raider Nation Radio and on Silver and Black today. By the way, be part of the show, 702-365-9200. The Sam and Ash text line, too, 69186 is that number. And we already got some folks online, so we're going to go straight to the phones, Q, before we get to some of the news, because clearly there's something going on with Raider Jim that he wants to talk like now. What's up, Raider Jim?
Hey, Scott, Q, it's Raider Jim from the Pacific Northwest.
What's up, brother?
How are you? Nice to chat with
Chilling.
You. Hey,
yes,
I think Las Vegas is just going to kick ass when it comes to hosting this thing, regardless of COVID. I think we should be so very proud of our team. Josh Jacobs just was amazing this past Sunday, and he's going to do it again, folks, and he's going to keep doing it again, and he's going to keep doing it again. So there's lots to be excited about. Nobody could put on a show like Las Vegas, regardless of this COVID thing. We're a Raider Nation family, and we're going to be okay.
I love that. Raider Jim, that's a great call, man. I appreciate that. It's a great way to start the show, because we usually don't start with calls. But I saw you. You got in right away, and we got another call. We got our man Snake Man. We'll get to you in a minute, Snake Man. But Q, today we heard from Josh Jacobs, and we heard from Derek Carr. Yes, absolutely. And the thing about it, you're watching these guys, and unfortunately because of COVID, as someone who covers a team, I haven't gotten to know them personally like you usually do when you cover people, because we can't be in close proximity, right? But watching them and being on all these Zooms with people, you know, you just look at these guys and these kids, especially kids like Josh Jacobs, and you're like, man, this is just such a good kid. Like, he's a good guy. He's got his head on straight, and he's got it all right. He's got his focus right, and what he wants to do. And one of the questions, when we've been talking about it for weeks right here, Q, which is Josh Jacobs said during the training camp, he said, hey, listen, I need to work. My biggest point of emphasis is on pass route running and catching, right? So receiving. He wanted to do that. That is what his coaches challenged him to do in John Gruden's offense. You need to be able to do that. You have those checkdowns with the running back trailing out. We've seen Jalen Richard make a career out of it, right? And so what did he do in order to do that? They asked him about that because he did so well against Carolina in his first game. And here's what he said about prep work for the passing game.
I did a lot more putting myself not as a running back aspect, but like a receiver, whether it was going outside and slot and actually learning how to get off of releases and stemming the guy and learning leverage and all of them kind of things like that. And then watching Hunter on his choice routes and just how creative he is. I'm just trying to put it in, find what I like and make it my own.
So interesting there, Q. Clearly he's looking, he's watching, he's learning from our teammate here. Of course, our 13 Minutes with Hunter Renfro, you can hear every Monday. This week it'll be on Tuesday. But he's watching Hunter Renfro. He's learning from the receivers, right?
Absolutely, and that's what you're supposed to do. You know, and you were talking about Josh Jacobs, just the guy that he is, and he's so humble. And look, he's come from some tough times. You know, he's been at the very bottom, and now he's on his rise to the top. And he's not there yet, but he's on the way, and he's got that work ethic, and he's got that will and that want to that we talk about so much. He's got that to not only just be satisfied with what he did his rookie year, but get a lot better. You mentioned he has to be a better receiver in this offense. He knows that. He caught the ball at Alabama, but he really has to be better in that aspect of his game. And so it showed up week one. And so you see why, because he didn't settle. What he did is say, okay, I need to get back in the lab and I need to figure out how to improve my game and make me a better player. Who better to watch and study? Hunter Renfro, a guy who's very good at not only running routes, but sitting down in the open zone to make himself available for a quarterback. And that's what Josh Jacobs did on Sunday.
That's right. And not only that, but Derek Carr talked about it too, because clearly the story of Josh Jacobs and how he continues to develop as one of the best young running backs, best running backs, period, in the NFL is of interest. And Derek Carr, when they asked him about Jacobs, his ability to catch, here's what he said.
I'm glad somebody asked him about that, because it's really improved. You know, it's something that him and I work on at practice, after practice a lot. Even last year, we'd do some things after practice, knowing that he wasn't the guy for those plays. You know what I'm saying? A lot of the quote unquote, check downs that we throw are really designed plays for our running backs that we've seen Jalen for years now come out the backfield and catch, you know, for certain things. And Josh was like, well, I don't want to come off the field. You know, I gotta get better at these things because I don't want to come off the field.
So, Q, in a week where we've been talking about Trent Brown and his inability to be available, right, you hear Derek Carr there. And I think that was such – look, we know Josh Jacobs has been working on it, right? We know that. He said it. But to hear Carr say, going back to last year and the fact that they were spending a lot of time – he said all the time after practice, he's learning routes that he doesn't even run, right? Or plays that he's not usually in on personnel groupings. He's learning it anyway. And that's the kind of guy that achieves greatness, because he goes way beyond. It's not even going beyond. It's going so far beyond that is what separates, in my view, and he's got a long way to go, of course, but that's what separates the great players from the good players.
Right, exactly. And the thing about it is what he said at the end, I don't want to come off the field. Well, if you don't want to come off the field, you need to be able to master everything so you don't have to. And there's certain players that get that opportunity to get on the field and they decide, I don't want to come off. So I'm going to make myself so valuable that the coach can't take me off. And, you know, this is the thing with Josh Jacobs. He wasn't a starter at Alabama. Nope. A lot of people said he can't do it on the NFL level. He's never been a starter. You heard all kind of pushback when the Raiders drafted him. He's not going to be able to be successful. Alabama running backs don't do that well in the league. I mean, there's so many things that we heard after the Raiders drafted him, and he's proven all those naysayers wrong. I can, I will, and I'm going to, and I'm doing it now.
And that's the important thing, and we don't have the cut right now, but later on in the session with him, of course, reporters are very good about asking questions that are related to other stories that they're working on or other storylines. But when they have a player there, one of the journalists on the Zoom asked Josh about being hurt and when he decides, and follow me on this one, Q, who decides for him if he can go back in or if he goes back in? Is it his own decision? Is it a combination of decisions? And, you know, what does he decide if he wants to go back out and play? And in essence, and I'm totally paraphrasing here, but Josh Jacobs said, look, I decide, and, it takes everything in the world to get me off the field, because they talked about his shoulder last year and playing with that injury. And, of course, we know what that's about, right, that question. But it goes back to, again, Josh Jacobs and what you just said about at the end saying, I want to stay on the field. And that's what you want. You want play. You don't want players to hurt if they're injured to play. But if they're hurt and they can play, you want that guy who wants to be out there so badly. It goes back to the conversation yesterday about doing things and not getting paid for them because you love them, right? And so that's what Josh Jacobs does. He is a guy who loves football.
Right. Exactly. And like I said, from where he's come from, he appreciates it more. And, you know, the NFL stands for not for long. He wants to make it as long as possible, or at least on his terms. You know, it doesn't have to be the longest career ever, but on his terms. When he's ready to step out, then he's ready to step out. But it's his choice, not because, well, he's not valuable to the franchise anymore.
Right. And it reminded me of the conversation we had with Tyrone Wheatley a few weeks ago here, where Tyrone Wheatley told us the story about John Gruden and how he brought him in later in his career. He said, listen, I'm going to have you be a different running back. I'm going to have you catch the ball. And Tyrone Wheatley appreciated that because he realized at that point in his career, he needed to change the way he played. He wasn't going to be that big time running back going in the hole. He was going to be a different type of player. And I think at an early age, Josh Jacobs understands that all aspects of his game are important. And yeah, he's not thinking about when he's the veteran and he's lost a step. But the fact that he's expanding his skill set to not only help his team, number one, but number two, to make him a more valuable player is very, very smart for a very young guy like that. Okay, we're going to go on the phone line. We'll take a call now. And we go out to our friend Snake Man. Snake Man, you're on with Q and Scott.
Hey, guys. How you doing, man?
Good, brother.
Chilling.
Hey, I just want to say, like, I love you guys, man. This platform is fantastic. I feel like I'm talking to my neighbor every time I call you guys. And I apologize for future ranting, getting, like, really quick with my points and whatnot, because, like, JT gets you all ramped up, and then when you call JT, he's like, all right, Raider Nation, let's go. I've got all these calls going with you guys. Let's go. Keep calling. All right, thanks a lot. All right, make your point five, you know? So I'm going to slow it down a little bit, but I just want to say a couple things about The Killers actually is awesome. That's one of the best shows I've ever seen at House of Blues down here in South Carolina. I grew up in the tri-state area. If everybody knows tri-state area, City Gardens, they had some of the best industrial goth punk bands that would come through there over the years through the 80s and 90s. And I got away from that scene for like the last few years, but I went down to see these guys, Killers, at Myrtle Beach, and they're fantastic. So good for those guys. It's awesome. It's a beginning for the Raiders to play their first home game. And I feel like the perfect storm is brewing here. You know, we're going against a quarterback who's in the twilight of his career. They're down their main wide receiver. We're playing at home on our turf at our beautiful new stadium. I mean, what could be better? I actually think this game's got a chance to be a low-scoring game. I got to think the Raiders got a good chance to pull this thing out. I think, what do you guys feel about the game plan? I feel like they need to stack the box, though, and make Kamara beat them in the run game and just don't get fooled on bubble pumps. Bug Reese.
Well, and Snake Man, no, it's a very good point. And I think, and we're going to talk about the Michael Thomas injury here after the first break. But I'll tell you, and Q, you tell me if you agree with me. I actually think this game is going to be lower scoring. And I also think that, yeah, stack in the box, Kamara is it's going to be like you played McCaffrey again. You got to make sure he doesn't beat you with their best receiver out. And the fact, look, Drew Brees is not the guy anymore who's going to pass for 398 yards, okay? He's not that guy anymore, I don't think, unless you're having really bad day on defense. And so he's a different kind of player with his skill set where it is. He's one of the greatest to ever play the game. But I think that the Raiders are going to have to control that game. Kamara is the offense as far as the cog, sort of like Josh Jacobs is from my perspective with the big injury, Q.
Well, I don't know, man. The Saints have so many weapons. I think the game is going to be a very close game. I think with Michael Thomas looking like he's going to be out, it's going to be a much more even playing field. I think the Raiders have a better than a puncher's chance to win this game. But man, I'll tell you, they still have a lot of weapons, and I think Jared Cook is the main guy. I think that's the one that everyone really needs to watch out for. That tight end, as Raider fans very well know, can be a very dynamic player. They got Emmanuel Sanders. They got Kamara. They got Latavius Murray, Raider fans. You know that guy. And they have a real stinking good defense as well, led by Dennis Allen, who used to be a Raiders head coach. So they got some weapons there that can get it done, you know, and Drew Brees is still Drew Brees.
No, absolutely. But if you look at it, I just think that they're going to come in. I think they're going to take a page out of – now, Sean Payton – a great coach, okay? Whether you like him or not, he's proven it. The deal is, though, I just think that they're going to use that. They're going to use a lot of what the Raiders do. They're going to use ball control, and you're right about Jared Cook. Jared Cook is going to be huge for them. His profile, it was big anyway, but now with Thomas out, it's going to be even bigger. But if you look at the game, the line's at 6 now, so the Raiders are a 6-point underdog. The over-under, according to William Hill, is now 50. So they're not expecting a 38-34 shootout. They're expecting a closer game that will be lower scoring. So we'll see. And that's predicated because of what happened last week with the Saints, of course, and then the injury plays a big deal with that as well. But it's going to be interesting, Snake Man. I think that, as Q put it, a puncher's chance. I think, you know, again, the odds makers favor it like they do, and I think that's pretty accurate. But if the Raiders play as well as they can on offense and that young defense comes together, finds a pass rush against a veteran team and a crafty quarterback who knows what he's doing, then it's going to be tough. But we'll get into that for the next few days. We're going to go out back on the Raider Nation listener hotline, and we bring in Brian. Brian, you're on with Scott and Q.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. Just want to touch on Monday's game. I just really believe that we have to put pressure on Breeze. I want to see some cornerback blitzes.
Yep.
Something to come off the edges, since our front four can't get to him alone. It's just proven so far early in the season we're having a problem. But I agree with Scott. Low-scoring game is what I would love to see. Think about it. Last year, Week 10, the Saints beat the Falcons. It was 9-26, but the Falcons beat them. Mm-hmm. The Falcons aren't that good. And I don't believe that we need to play the perfect game, whether it's against Kansas City or the Saints, these high-powered offenses. When last year, in Week 5, Kansas City lost to the Colts in Arrowhead, 13-19. That's not a high-scoring game. So people keep saying, oh, yeah, we have to play the perfect game. I don't believe that. They lost back-to-back games. Week 6, they lost to the Texans, 24-31. So Kansas City is beatable. Same thing with the Saints. These teams are beatable. The Golden Knights are now finished. If we win on Monday, Tuesday, this town is going to explode. We go 2-0.
I agree with
that.
Think
about it.
I agree with that. And it's too bad the Golden Knights didn't have maybe a Raider on their team that could take a shot from inside 5 feet of the goal. But nonetheless, listen, when we say perfect game, I don't know. When I say perfect game, I mean the Raiders have to execute flawlessly to their game plan. That's the way I'll say it. Because for them to beat, the Saints are more experienced in every aspect, for the most part, on that team offensively and even more so defensively, Q. So for the Raiders to win that game, okay, they have to play well. You have to have Max Crosby go off a little bit. You have to have Cleveland Farrell and Malik Collins to have a good game and get more than two quarterback pressures. Okay, you're gonna have. That's what we mean by perfect game. Don't mean perfect game like you're gonna do everything to the T, but you have to show that the pieces you put in place on defense and on offense are all clicking and are succeeding at executing the game plan that gives you the best chance to win.
The thing being at it is, man, you have to play penalty free like you pretty much did on Sunday. That was a really good job. But like you said, you've got to get pressure on the quarterback. If you let Drew Brees sit back there, he's going to pick you apart.
Yes.
He's got weapons. I mean, it's not like one guy is their only weapon. They have a bunch.
Right.
And they have a really good defense. So they have to come with their A game in this game. I think it's a lot closer now that Michael Thomas is out. But I'm not going back and looking at what the Saints did in 2019 and judging what they're going to do on Monday. I don't think that that's... I don't think that has relevant.
No, I don't think it's relevant either. And to another point, it's like, look, it's a big stage, okay? And I know there's no fans there. I get that piece of it. If there were fans there, I think it would benefit the Raiders much greater than it does the Saints.
Agreed.
Even though they've been through the ringer, so to speak. But to me, it's about now. You have to look at the teams now. And if they're going to go out and have a chance to win that game, which would be huge, huge for this city, for that franchise, they're going to have to do better than they did, especially defensively, against Carolina. That doesn't mean they didn't play well against Carolina. That doesn't mean they won the game. They're just going to have to do better. All right, we're going to take a break. When we're going to come down, we'll break down a little bit the Michael Thomas injury that Q was talking about. How does that change, if at all, the Raiders' approach on defense? You're listening to the Silver and Black Today, powered by Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys. You can visit them at salmonash.com, only here on Raider Nation Radio.
1-0 has a nice ring to it.
Here's the fullback, and the Raiders hit him. I'm not sure he got it.
I'm not sure he got it.
Raiders were ready. This is not even close.
Yeah.
This is Raiders football.
We are Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Hello. Somebody pick up the phone. Q, pick up the phone, man. Come on.
It's already picked up. Okay. I'm already calling someone else already.
Okay, good.
They didn't answer right away, so I just went to the next.
Welcome back to the Silver and Black Today, powered by Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234. Thank you to them for their support. Also, want to give a shout-out to Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bars, drjensnutrition.com. And Q, like I said earlier, I had the banana today. And I'm telling you, you guys got to try out Dr. Jen's. Use the code SBT10, and you get a discount, a special discount only for our listeners. Plus, you get free shipping. Make sure you try it out. The banana is almost completely gone off the face of the earth until they can make more. And they don't make these in some back room warehouse with a bunch of preservatives. No, it's all good natural food for you. Great meal replacement. That's how I've been using it, breakfast and lunch, saving myself for a nice protein-filled dinner. And it's good stuff. Spinach, quinoa, kale, all the good things. You'll never taste it, though. It's always good. Q, what did you do today? Did you have blueberry today?
I had blueberry today, but I got a couple boxes of bananas, so since they're so hard to find,
eBay.
I might just have to start hustling them.
eBay.
You know what I mean?
That's right. You might get double the price.
I'll be the plug. Who's the plug for the Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bar?
There you go.
Your boy Q. Hey, look, man, it's hard out here for a pimp, man. You got to make it work.
I love it.
You know what I'm saying? Make that money. Don't let that money make you.
That's right. Got to be on top of it. We are talking Raiders football, and by the way, give us a call, 702-365-9200. It's your opportunity to get on the air with us and talk about Raider football. But we wanted to take this part of the show and talk about the Michael Thomas interview. As Q mentioned during the top of the show, look, he's one player. The Saints have other weapons. The Raiders have to prepare for Jared Cook and Alvin Kamara and a bunch of other offensive weapons that they do have. But Michael Thomas, remember, this is a guy who led the league in receptions the last 2 years. Last year, he had over 1,700 yards receiving, okay? And it's not only his play on the field and his contribution that they miss. It's, to me, Q, though, it's also a bit of a psychological piece. When you have one of your best players who's not going to be out there, it's a little bit of a letdown. Now, you have to rise above that, but I still think that that's the biggest edge for the Raiders is the fact that it's a psychological piece.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big deal that Michael Thomas is not going to be out there. What looks like he's not going to be out there. I mean, there's still time. You know, he hasn't been completely ruled out. It looks like he's going to miss it. But I think it's a huge deal. And again, I feel like it makes the playing field that much more level for the Raiders. And, you know, you hate to celebrate an injury or something like that. You know what I mean? But ultimately, you have to go out there with the guys that are available. And so if Michael Thomas is not available, the Raiders have a much better chance than I think that they had with him out there. So, and you know, he does a lot of things, like you mentioned, you know, psychologically. He also is a really good blocker down the field.
Yeah.
You know, Taysom Hill gets a lot of extra yards because Michael Thomas is blocking. Alvin Kamara gets a lot of extra yards because Taysom Hill is blocking and because Michael Thomas is blocking and Jared Cook is blocking. I mean, there's a lot that goes into the Saints offense. And so, I mean, again, I feel like it's a lot more playing field. But it's still going to be such a dogfight out there on Monday night.
There's no doubt about it. But if we go back, so when was the last time the Saints played without Michael Thomas? Well, you have to go back 58 games. Talk about a guy who's on the field, right? 58 games, 2016, which, by the way, was the year that the Raiders beat them in the opening game down in New Orleans. We talked about
Jalen Richard's coming out party.
That's right. You're right.
First carry of his NFL career, he took it to the house.
Took it to the house. You got to like that's. It's hard to go back from that, isn't it, though? It's like, hey, well, we're going to expect you
to do
a lot
more. It doesn't get much better than that.
It does not. But the Saints lost that game, and it was to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they lost that game 16-11. Now, again, you're going back 4 years, different roster for the most part, and all that kind of stuff. But just as a way of comparison, when you look at Michael Thomas and his production and what he means to that team, I think that's it. And I do agree with you. I think as much as you are a coach or a player on the Raiders and you say, okay, well, they're going to be without a weapon, we might have to adjust how we play things a little bit. The fact is you want to beat teams when they're at full strength. I don't know about you, Q, when you played basketball. When you went up against a team, you wanted, like Damon Arnette and these young cornerbacks, Trayvon Mullen and the safeties, Jonathan Abram, they want to play him because, look, if you're on national TV and you shut them down, let's just say you did, not saying they would have, but if they did, that's a big, big deal. That's a big coming out party. It's a huge momentum swing for you for this early part of the season. And so not having them there, I think, is a little bit of a letdown, but then you just go right back into game planning and get ready for whoever's going to be out there.
Right. I mean, and look, you just play who's out there. I'll tell you what really hurts is if the Raiders pull off the victory on Monday night, the first thing you'll hear nationally, not from us, but the first thing you'll hear is, well, the Saints were without Michael Thomas.
Right. Well, the Saints, they only scored 14 points, and you got to wonder, was that because Michael Thomas wasn't there. Out there, even though the Raiders scored 40 points? I'm just using an example.
Look, and I'll say this. The other thing about what the Saints have coming to town on Monday is the fact that they picked up Emmanuel Sanders in the offseason, and that was huge.
Big time.
He is a guy who could potentially be a number one, but he was brought in to be a number two. Like Tyrell Williams was brought in to be a number two to Antonio Brown. Ultimately, that's what it was. And it just, well, we all know how it shook out. Emmanuel Sanders, as good as he is, was brought in to be a number two to Michael Thomas. And so now, without Michael Thomas being there, Emmanuel Sanders could have a more of an impact as well.
No doubt about it. By the way, and we're going to talk a little bit about that linebacking core for the Raiders and what it's going to be faced with, but just want to remind you guys, we've teamed up with Paul Padelaw to give you away $2,000 cash in September. Remember, we did this last month when we kicked off on the air here. If you listen to Raider Nation Radio during the month of September for daily code words, so we're giving you code words, so you got to know the code. Then you I'm going to tell you in a second. When you get there, you go to LVSportsNetwork.com, and you enter the daily code word for a chance to win. Each word gets you another entry to win the $2,000 cash from Paul Padelaw, where it's not about the injury, it's about the recovery. And today's code word, are you ready for this?
I am. Tell me. I'm typing it in right now.
It's super No, I'm just kidding. It is bench.
I know how to spell that.
It is bench.
Oh. Never mind. Don't do that.
Don't tell anybody.
Don't go there.
It's bench.
Okay.
Like Johnny Bench.
Okay. I was thinking about like when you get benched.
Benched.
When you get sitting on the bench because you are too injured to play.
Uh-oh. Oh, you went there.
I know, that was
foul.
You
went there. But anyway, thank you to Paul Padelaw for that. Again, the code word today is bench, LVSportsNetwork.com to enter for that cool, cool drawing. Now, Q, the Michael Thomas injury, you look at what is left there in New Orleans. You just mentioned Emmanuel Sanders, but we talked about Jared Cook. With Jared Cook there, to me, and you, of course you had Christian McCaffrey last week, but with Jared Cook, this linebacking corps, we don't know about Nick Kwiatkowski yet if he's going to be back. We heard some encouraging news from Vinny at the end of yesterday's show saying that maybe he could be back this week, but we just don't know yet. So Jared Cook against Corey Littleton, Raekwon McMillan, Nicholas Morrow, they're really going to have to play. I mean, Corey Littleton's going to have, I think, a really big game to lead that linebacking core. And then whoever is subbing in for Kwiatkowski, if he doesn't go, McMillan will be in there, Morrow will be in there. Those guys are going to have to play a little bit above of a good game. They're going to have a great game.
Exactly right. You know, it's going to be a huge test. I mean, because again, there's so many weapons. Taysom Hill, that's a guy that you have to kind of pay attention to as well. I mean, Sean Payton loves to go to him in multiple different, fashions, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, special teams. I mean, he's got them all over the field. So the linebacking core is really going to be tested. I think Corey Littleton just needs to be in Jared Cook's hip pocket all game long. I think that's one of those that you just kind of look at and say, look, it's almost like what my dad used to say about that cat defense. You take that cat, I got that cat, and we're going to go.
I got you. Although I have to tell you something. I'm going to just say this. We used to talk about this with one of my other coaches. I think Taysom Hill is a whole lot of PR. I don't think he's that. I understand where they
use him a lot.
They use him a lot, but what does he do?
Well, in the playoffs, actually, he almost willed them to victory last year.
Oh, the key word, almost.
Man, he was in the playoffs.
He was. That's
true. Don't discount that, man.
No,
he's not a quarterback, But he's a football player.
He's not a quarterback, and I just don't get it all the way. But you have to respect when he's on the field, because in open space and he gets the ball, anything can happen. But you look at this team and you look at the Saints and you look at what the Raiders – what about the approach on defense, Q, do you think has to change here? You talked about, yeah, those linebackers having to play out of their heads, which, you know, Corey Littleton, he's going to have to be that star back there for them. But if you're looking at the defensive backfield too and what they're going to be doing, they're still going to have their hands full. That young defensive back, Damon Arnett, the Trayvon Mullen, Jonathan Abram, they're going to have to, I mean, they're going to have to play better than they did last week.
No doubt. No doubt. I mean, that was 1 week, you know, and they have to come out and they have to learn and they have to grow from what they were able to do in week one. And that's what you want anyway. You want the natural growth. Jonathan Abram made it a personal mission to, you know, always know where Christian McCaffrey was. You mentioned Alvin Kamara earlier. That may be something he has to do, is make sure that he has an eye on that guy, because he can run and he can catch the ball in the backfield, very Christian McCaffrey-like. So, yeah, there's a lot of different things that go into this game, and a lot of pressure is going to be on that defense. Sean Payton and Drew Brees, they're going to test them. They absolutely are going to test them. They're going to test them deep. They're going to go across the middle. Jared Cook, again, is probably the guy that I fear the most, and fear is the wrong word, but just am concerned about the most, because I know from watching Derek Carr continues to feed him and feed him and feed him that he could be such a weapon.
Yeah, and not only that, but you look at the recent history of the Raiders against good tight ends, not great. Right now, that was without linebackers. Now they have linebackers, right. And those linebackers that they spent the money on have to perform. It's just, there's no doubt. You can't have a subpar game if you're Corey Littleton, Nick Kwiatkowski, or Raekwon McMillan, any of those guys. All right, we're going on the phones. Quick call here. What do you think, El Paso Raider, about the Michael Thomas deal?
Happy hump day, fellas, to start off with today. But I got a couple things to talk about first. You know, the issue with Trent Brown, I believe that we should just cut our losses and, you know, either trade him or get someone that wants to be there and actually wants to play, because I feel like he doesn't have it in him. I don't think he has the same mentality as the culture that's being built in here in this organization. And I feel like we should just cut our losses and try to move on. Another thing, you know, obviously it's victory week. That feels good, right, after a Sunday win. But I saw a couple things. Like, the defense has no more excuses. I know we have young players, but I feel like Paul Gunther's defense is just the same, hasn't changed anything. The system stays the same. Like, I just don't see anything different from it. And another thing that I brought up last week was John Gruden's offense. You know, he kind of left the foot. He was attacking, but then all of a sudden he just went conservative again. Like, that, I don't feel like that's going to work moving forward. And now with Michael Thomas and the Saints, there's no excuses, you know. You win some, you lose some, and nobody's going to feel sorry for us when we lose players. You know, if they beat us, they're going to beat us, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, El Paso Raider. Good call, Q.
Yeah, it was a good call. I'm not going to criticize John Gruden's offense, man. They put up 34 points.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's all I'm going to say about that. I mean, they you know, yes. Yeah. They tried to protect the defense because the defense was getting gashed. So, you know, they went more with the run and tried to feed Jacobs more. And I get that, man, trying to take the air out of the game. You got to do that at some point, man. I mean, they were trying to stay out of a shootout. So 34 points, I'm fine with. Well, and that gives you a chance to win each and every game.
No, you're absolutely right. But not only that, but again, I think and we tried to do this during the offseason a lot and talk about it, is what the offense is. Do all and El Paso Raider might very well know a lot about the offense. So I'm not saying that about you, my man. But a lot of people, I don't think they understand how that offense works. It's about getting positive yards every down. So right. If that means you go 40 yards downfield, you go 40 yards downfield. But it's not Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You're not going to see them run an Andy Reid type offense. You're going to see them run an offense that's much more conservative. It's about not taking massive shots all the time. It's about 5 yards, 8 yards, 12 yards, 14 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards. You're just doing that in succession and marching down the field. So a lot of times, yeah, early in the game, you might pump out a throw. It's a 40-yard downfield throw to Henry Ruggs, which unfortunately this time he didn't get to, or the nice 27-yarder he had across the middle of the slant pattern, the wheel route. He does that fine. That's going to happen too. But because they do that one play and then the next 10 plays are intermediate routes or short routes or runs, doesn't mean he's getting conservative. He's going with what works.
Exactly. You know, and you played a clip earlier of Derek Carr talking about Josh Jacobs and him running routes. And one of the biggest key to what he had to say, he said, you know, a lot of those, and he put in air quotes, checkdowns that everybody talks about are design plays to the back, to the running back out of the backfield. That's how the play is designed to go. Even though everyone always says check down Charlie or whatever they want to say about him, a lot of those plays are designed to go exactly there to the running back.
Yeah, no, you're no doubt. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. And Nick Cothrell from silverandblacktoday.com, our website, wrote a great piece about the Raiders' offense and the tough task they'll face against the veteran New Orleans Saints defense. You're listening to the Silver and Black Today, brought to you by Sam and Ash, here only on Raider Nation Radio.
You saw what happened in that game, so we have our work cut out for us. You know, when you watch the film, they're talented on all levels. You know, a lot of teams nowadays – You can find some spots that you can pick and choose where to go at and things like that. They got great secondary, and not just talking corners. And so they got multiple safeties that can play football at a high level, multiple linebackers that can run and hit, and their D-line is disruptive.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
That's some wicked snare drum going there, brother.
That's good.
That's good stuff. I like that. Makes me want to sneak around a corner in like...
And do what?
Like a black ninja outfit. Being all
and do what?
Being all undercover. I don't know. Just
and
just,
do what?
Just creep around. Not like creep around.
That's not
like,
good, man. Nobody wants you to be a creep.
Nah, not a creep around like a weirdo.
Well, you just said a creep around.
More like a James Bond type. You know what I'm saying?
Just hey, like, man, just go ahead and bail on this conversation, man. you went way too deep.
That's right. I just want to. I uncomfortable conversations are great. All right, we're back.
Creep around.
We're joking around here. All right, we're back. Silver and Black today. We're talking Raiders football. The Silver and Black. 702-365-9200 is the number. Before we go back to the phone lines, we're going to go now. We're going to talk about what Derek Carr talked about coming back in from the break, and that is the New Orleans Saints defense, or New Orleans, however. How do you say it, Q?
New Orleans.
No, so do I. Okay, good. Or if you like to say Nolans, I get it, whatever. But nonetheless, we want to talk about their defense. And to do so, we're going to bring on one of the new and talented writers at silverandblacktoday.com. Nick Cothrell joins us. And Nick, your piece that ran today, you talk about the Raiders offense and this kind of tough task that they face. Of course, the Raiders offense did so well in week one. Came out, scored 34 points. But you look at this Saints team, experienced all the way through, up front, in the middle, and on the back end. What specifically, number one, is this Raiders offense going to have to deal with that they didn't have to deal with in Carolina?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. So ultimately, what sticks out to me is they returned 8 starters from last year's defense. And most notably, they have Cam Jordan, who gets after the quarterback at a pretty alarming rate. He had 15 sacks last year. And with the uncertainties of Trent Brown, is he going to play? And then replacing him with Sam Young, who also suffered a groin injury, can he hold down the right side, or are they going to have to turn to Denzel Good, who's had limited experience? So I think that's going to be kind of the real test. Are they going to be able to control the Saints' pass rush?
Yeah, no, that's going to be one of the major factors in the game. But Scott mentioned earlier the secondary, and that's not just the corners, but that's also the safeties. All these guys have the ability to go get the ball and make a play on it. You know, you got Jack Rabbit, Janoris Jenkins, you got Marshawn Lattimore, Malcolm Jenkins. All those guys are problems.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, they picked off Tom Brady twice last week. And Derek Carr, you know, there's that narrative around him that he's dinking and dunking. He took a couple shots last week. But like you said, they have guys on the back end. So I kind of expect Derek to pick his spots when he does want to attack downfield. I don't think it's going to be anything too overboard. But kind of when the moment's right, I think you could see at least a couple shots downfield.
Well, when you look at it, you talked about, Nick, the matchup that sort of favors that Saints defense, and it's up front, especially if Trent Brown can't go. But on the other side of the ball, with the Raiders offensively trying to get things going, this is a case of, hey, deja vu, right? Because last week, you really needed to get Josh Jacobs going so that you could go downfield to Henry Ruggs, which is kind of, as you call it, the new wrinkle in the Raiders offense. But that game plan of using Josh Jacobs, that doesn't change against this defense, even though they're more stacked.
I wouldn't say so. You know, this offense runs through Josh Jacobs, as you saw in week one, getting three touchdowns. But the Saints are tough up front, even against the run. They were third in the NFL last season in stopping the run. But that's John Gruden's bread and butter. So I don't think that you can hesitate from that. And then working off the run, implementing play action to kind of give the defense a little bit of fits and open up some separation for the Raiders receivers to get involved in the passing game.
What does Dennis Allen, in your opinion, do so well as far as possibly like disguising his defenses to try to make it difficult on Derek Carr or whatever quarterback's back there to try to get those big chunk plays?
You know, he brings a lot of blitzes. The Saints are not afraid to bring the house. And the continuity they have on defense with guys that have played together for such a long time, I think they just communicate pretty well with one another. They know their proper assignments, and Dennis Allen has been a big part of bringing in that continuity and guys that thrive in his system, because he's done a great job since taking over there in New Orleans.
Yeah, and after getting fired on the tarmac, JT the Brick was talking about when he was on the flight back from London with the Raiders, and they landed, and that's when Allen got the cut from the Raider organization. Interesting story. Nick Cothrell from silverandblacktoday.com joins us. He writes about the NFL, the Raiders there. And Nick, one of the guys you brought up in your piece is Bryan Edwards. Now, Bryan Edwards last week didn't see a lot of targets or anything like that, but that's how it's going to go for the Raiders, right? They have all those tools on offense themselves, and in any given game, depending on how it unfolds, one guy can step up, another guy might not get the numbers, but he's doing the work in the trenches, whether it be blocking or being a decoy, whatever. What is it with Bryan Edwards in this game, do you think maybe gives him a chance to jump out and let people across the country know he's there and be a good target for Derek Carr?
Yeah, you know, like we pointed out, that Josh Jacobs is going to be involved early, and I think that's the key. Is bringing in guys, the safeties, bringing them into the box, and then taking some shots on the outside. Now, they have Marshawn Lattimore and Janoris Jenkins outside, both of them established corners in the league. But Bryan Edwards is bigger than both of them, and he's someone who can really box out his defenders. And as we've seen from Derek Carr's college days with Devontae Adams to now in the NFL, dating back to his time with Michael Crabtree, he gravitates to those type of receivers. So that could be a spot where if they're inside the red zone, Derek Carr could look to Bryan Edwards if he's matched up with, let's say, Janoris Jenkins, as Bryan Edwards is quite a bit bigger than some of the corners they have.
Do you think this is a game potentially that you could see more of Darren Waller and Foster Moreau on the field at the same time?
You know, I would hope so. I think Foster Moreau is a very intriguing tight end, still young, still has to learn some things. I was pretty shocked with the signing of Jason Witten this offseason. But I think, you could see some of that, because if they need to stay home and block to kind of refrain the Saints' defensive front, both of those guys are capable of doing that. And then if they need to cut loose and go out for a route, they can do that as well. So I think they should use a little bit more of Darren Waller and Foster Moreau. I know Waller was limited a little bit last week, but we all know what he's capable of.
All right. Nick Cothrell from silverandblacktoday.com. Get up there, read his story today about the Raiders offense against the Saints veteran defense. Nick, we'll see you on down the line, buddy. We'll talk to you real soon.
Right on. Thanks, guys. Keep doing your thing.
All right, there you go. Yeah, that defense, man, it's going to – look, the Raiders have more offensive weapons – But the matchups are going to be real interesting on Monday night. All right, we're going to step aside. Top of the hour break. When we come back, we'll take some of your calls. We'll also be joined by Mick Akers from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He's going to talk to us about the new Raider image story. You got your cash ready? Or now, wait, you can't use cash because there's a shortage. You have to use your debit card.
I ain't got no cash. None. Yeah, I ain't got no cash on my debit card neither.
You can buy.
I'm broke.
You can buy a $5,000 Swarovski crystal helmet. But I'll tell you what, man, I saw some cool hoodies. We'll ask Mick. We'll have Mick on right after the break to talk about Allegiant Stadium and, of course, the Raider image store there and all the cool jazz stuff they got going down right off of Al Davis Way. You're listening to the Silver and Black today, only on Raider Nation Radio.